Even my youthful optimism vastly underestimated the opportunity I had fallen into. Soon I was experiencing the absolute heights and depths of journalism. I had watched Dooley working his police sources enough to know what to do on a Sunday morning, July 4, 1954, when a startling police call came in. There had been a murder out in the western Cleveland suburb of Bay Village. A woman named Marilyn Shepherd had been found bloodily beaten to death in her bed. Her husband, a respected neurosurgeon, was found lying unconscious downstairs. Dr. Sam Shepherd claimed their home had been invaded by a man he had chased to the beach below their home, where the man had turned on him and beaten him senseless. It was this bushy-haired man who had killed his wife, Sam Shepherd insisted, a claim few of the hardened cops on the scene believed. In the TV series and later in the movie made from this case, the killer was a one-armed man. I started scribbling notes for my broadcast, the first news coverage of what would become the trial of the century, O.J. before O.J. It was one of the most shameful episodes in modern American journalism. Often the coverage was nothing more than sensational speculation and hysteria posing as news. "Why isn't Sam Shepherd in jail?" screamed the headline across the front page of the Cleveland Press as the investigation began. And that was just the start of what the U.S. Supreme Court, reversing Sam Shepherd's conviction years later, described as the carnival atmosphere that denied him due process. The trial began in the fall of 1954, by which time I was one of the most knowledgeable radio reporters covering this story. Big guns came rolling into town. Theo Wilson, the top crime reporter for the New York Daily News, the nation's biggest selling newspaper. The renowned journalist Bob Considine. Some famous detective from Scotland Yard, whose name I don't recall. The courtroom was packed every day. The papers rushing to publish every tidbit they could uncover or manufacture. A chain of downstate Ohio newspapers signed me to write daily features while I was also doing a nightly radio newscast and attending college, full-time, supposedly. When, on December 21st, the guilty verdict came in, as other reporters scrambled for payphones in that era before cell phones, I dashed from the courtroom, ran down the hall, and squeezed into a janitor's closet that the wily WGAR team had clandestinely fitted with a live mic. Within seconds, I was on the air, ad-libbing my scoop, with a bit of heart-thumping, heavy breathing coloring my delivery. Next day, a local paper remarked of my beat, noting in particular that one of the competing...